You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm here on ESPN 850 WKNR. Let's go to the phones, 216-578-0850, and we will go right now to Anthony in California. Anthony, welcome to the show.
Hey, what's going on, Nate? What's going on, Matt, this
morning? Good, brother. Not too much, man. How you doing?
I'm good. I tried to get in yesterday, you know, and talk to you guys about the things, but the phone lines are so busy, I couldn't get in.
It happens, but you're here with us today. Let's go.
Oh, yeah. Well, the thing I want to talk about is strictly, I remember I talked to you guys before about how the Browns are good at coming back with adjustments at halftime. They need to stop being a second-half team and be a four-quarter team. When are we going to start blowing teams out and just getting the lead and beating them down and running them off the football field? It's too much of the second-half stuff. We got to start playing some real football for four quarters. We can't just be a second-half team throughout the whole season. I mean, that's all we've been doing.
You're right.
Being a second-half team.
And ironically, what's so funny is that the point that you're making, I have the stat sheet in front of me, and I was actually, as you called, highlighting the scoring by quarters. And as we sit right now, we're outscored 20-27 in the first quarter of football games, 36-41 we're outscored in the second quarter. We're outscored in the third quarter, 24-37. And the only quarter where we have an advantage is 58-50, which is in the fourth quarter. So we're outscored for the first three quarters, most significantly actually in the third quarter, and then we make up for a lot of that with our scoring in the fourth quarter having to come back to make it a closer game.
Right now we're being, on average, outscored by just over 4 points a game through the first three quarters, and then we make up about a point and a half in the fourth quarter, which is why we trail by 17, basically 3 points a game on the season. It's interesting because what it shows to me, the trend there is we're actually worst in the first and third quarters.
Yeah.
So does that mean we're not making the necessary halftime adjustments to come back here in the third quarter? Why are we having such trouble in the third quarter? And it seems that these guys are slow starting. You get the opportunity to start the game twice, basically. We're slow starting both of those times. In your experience in locker rooms, why do some teams start fast? Why do some teams start slow? What is it, and what can be done, if anything, to try to prevent it?
I think when you no longer are questioning your game plan, And your team and the type of team that you are, whether it's physical running or a pass offense, or you don't go back and forth with what type of team you're trying to be based around who you're playing. You're saying, we're going to do what we do. Let them try to figure us out. And I think that's the only speculative scenario that I can kind of create coming from this, where, you know, we come in kind of tiptoeing and feeling things out in the first quarter, you know, and maybe it's a little more run heavy than usual, or maybe we're a little more pass heavy, but we're not, it's not defined. And then we make the adjustment. Great. Okay. They're doing this against us. Now we're going to start calling this and doing that in the second quarter. And then the same way, because another team, as we go in and make our changes, another team does the same and they make their changes. And so they make their plays. In some cases, what I'm trying to say is it just takes us a little bit more, a little longer to figure out who we are, and then go, oh, well, let's go with that. You know, we're a little bit more wishy-washy at the start of games and less defined, and we're letting everyone determine how the game's going to go instead of us determining that.
So to you, does that mean, is that on the players, or does that mean the coaches are taking a little bit more time to figure out the game plan and what's actually going to work on that day?
It's definitely a combination. I mean, to point a finger at one or the other, that I can't do. The one thing that I don't know, and maybe you know to be fact, does John DeFilippo script his plays?
I don't know if John DeFilippo comes out with a script for like the first 15.
First 15, first 12, some 10. Some coaches, you know, get through six and deviate off that plan immediately based around what they've seen throughout the first six plays in that script. But that has a lot to do with your success, because if you go three and out, you know, I haven't even gotten halfway through my first 15. We got to scrap it and go a different direction. Right. So that's a question that I would throw out, and I think, and I'm not saying it, you're hanging your hat on that's the reason why, but I just, I don't believe offensively that we go out and say, this is who we are, this is what we're going to do, and impose our will either through the air or on the ground. We're kind of feeling them out, and seeing where we can take advantage of it. And it just so happens, by the time we do, it happens to be in the second and fourth quarter.
Yeah, we got to play four quarters of football. That's certainly what you have to do when you're a team that's trying to figure out how to win these games.
Yeah.
We did well as a front runner. In the one game we were a front runner, we did well against the Tennessee Titans. We got to find ourselves in that position more often than not. It's going to be tough the next 4 weeks at St. Louis, home for Arizona, at Cincinnati, at Pittsburgh. A tough stretch, certainly, for the Browns, but they've got to find a way to get it done. Interesting story coming out of Indianapolis, and I don't know if you had an opportunity to see it, but the punter of the Colts, Pat McAfee, explained what they were actually attempting to do and why what happened with that Colts fake punt. Did you have an opportunity to see
this?
I did not. Okay, so it's interesting. So Colts punter, he was talking about what happened. Griff Whalen, who ended up being the center and snapping the ball, was never supposed to be the center on that play. The gunner who was going to become the center all week was safety Clayton Gethers. Gethers got injured in the second quarter, so Griff Whalen, who had never done it before, was the center in a play that he had never practiced before.
You don't call that.
So this is on the coaches to me, and it gets worse. But yes, it's on the coaches. So number one, ding, 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 you don't call the play now.
Black line it.
You cross it up. Now, at the same point, when you hear the original intent of the play, you actually think probably you still can go with it.
Okay.
And you'll see what you think. So the point of the play is actually a deception play. You're trying to manipulate the receiving team into thinking they have to sub their defense back on. Because if you remember, everybody was in the middle, and then all of them ran to the sideline, and they had the entire offense standing on the sideline looking like they were about to run onto the field all together.
Okay.
So that was the point. We're sprinting to the sideline in the hopes to make the other team think we're subbing our offense back onto the field. So when they think the offense is coming back on, you hope that they have their defense come back on, and there you go ahead and snap the ball. You steal 5 yards. That's okay. The whole point. You're trying to catch them
stupid.
In an illegal substitution.
Okay. Dumb.
Okay. That's the intention of it. That's the thought.
Dumb.
But the Patriots didn't substitute. The Colts added a second option to the play in practice that week to still try and draw New England offsides. As mentioned above, Whalen was not part of that practice. He was never taking these reps. So last week in practice, Griff is at the other end catching the punts. We added something to try and draw them offsides if they don't do the sub. Griff never got the heads up this was happening because it's not in the playbook. Griff Whalen's a Stanford guy. He reads the playbook. He knows everything he has to do. But if it's not there for an audible that's added, he can't know. That's why the miscommunication comes from the players we're talking about. Griff has no idea that we're now trying to draw the guys offsides. In the play, it says, if the punter comes under center, you snap the ball. If somebody is under center, you snap them the ball. That third's trying to get it. If not, we don't snap it. We take delay. But Whalen didn't know that was added into practice that week. So he says, I feel him. It says I'm supposed to snap it. I snap the ball. And that was it. So that's why they kept talking about miscommunication. That, to me, as you said right out of the gate, is on the coaches. Or you grab the guy and say, Griff, don't snap the ball, period. Right?
Yeah.
You can't say we just added this in that now maybe you can snap the ball.
I just, in my history, in special teams or anytime there's a trick play in offensively, you know, as a defensive player, you knew it. You knew it was in the game plan, and you knew the type of game scenario that it had to be. You're up by 7, you know, after a turnover, you're going to take that shot. Now's when we're going to bring that, or you have to show them this formation and a route off of it or a run off of it to get a reaction to see how they will react today to that action. For you to do the halfback pass, the flea flicker, you know, the screen pass, whatever it is, or, excuse me, or the fake punt, you know, onside kick. And being a part of a lot of those from a special team standpoint, it was always very exciting. And you wanted to do it every week because you knew it's like you'd have a fake up and whatever fake was up, it's like you're kind of chomping a bit. And it's almost like in the movies when they show the Navy SEALs kind of like training and training and training and they finally get their like their operation, like their orders to go to war. You're like, we're really going to do this? You know, and so, I mean, butts get tight. Like, you want to be perfect because if you know if you execute it perfect and you get the look that you're expecting, it should, minus a fumble, minus a drop pass, it should work and work with flying colors. And as I put percentages on a lot of things, 70 to 80% of the time that we faked, we were successful. But I just said, it's just surprising to me that you don't scrap that play, and you don't just go coach up a guy that's never done it on a play like this.
But it's the only guy that really has to be there is the one who's touching the football.
Be one of the motion guys.
Who cares?
Who cares? Go line up and, you know, pick your butt on the sideline and act like you're running off on the... No! The guy that's actually going to touch the football doesn't get a memo?
Right.
That's ridiculous.
It's bad coaching.
Stupid they ever called it. Stupid. Because if I were Chuck Pagano, I'd walk over to my special team coach and look him right in the face, and you go, can we do this? Is everybody on board and ready? And if that special team coach says, yes, we got him, we're good, that coach would have had to have that conversation prior to sending one guy out there with half of his orders and the other half a mystery.
Which certainly ended up being a turning point in the game.
Stupid.
Absolutely. Very, very silly. So did you I don't know if you saw this too, the LSU field goal kicker, the place kicker who took the fake for the touchdown to beat Florida?
I saw the
He said he blacked out in the middle of it once he got the ball. He was so, as you talked about, he was so nervous that they were actually going to do it. He's never scored a touchdown. He doesn't even remember from the point that he got the ball. He doesn't remember running in the end zone or anything that happened. He literally was so stressed out and nervous that he blacked out running into the end
zone. That's how it is. And who else this year was it? It might have been McAfee in Indy when he faked and did their fake rollout. And he's like, if I wouldn't have got that first down, Chuck Pagano.
Oh, he did it on his own.
Yeah, he did it on his own. Like, Pagano would have, like, ripped my face off on the sideline, and I would have just ran right to that's the amount of stress when you do not follow orders. And that's and to bring everything full circle, and that's what's so frustrating about, at least for me, about this run defense. You know, follow your orders. And how many times it's week after week now, Mike Pettine and Jim O'Neill have to explain one guy not doing their job, this guy's not in their gap. If you're a defensive lineman, you have a job. Get in your gap. And now, unless they're being told something else that I don't know about, control your gap and define that for the people that play behind you. Because if you're questioning your gap, guess who's behind you? The linebackers are questioning their gaps, and the safeties behind them are questioning their gaps. And it's that snowball effect of mush. Of a run defense is why we look like that.
And that's why you see sometimes on tape we have multiple people in one gap and nobody in other gaps, and teams just run right through.
I could run up
huge holes.
I said this before. I could draw up.
I love when you do it.
I could get on the whiteboard and draw up every single run that went from 6 yards or more against the Cleveland Browns the entire season. And in time, I could find, and by going back and forth, zip, zap, and back and forth on the rewinder, find you a culprit on every play and who didn't do their job.
Matt Wilhelm. Maybe we could have the Matt Wilhelm culprit segment.
Who's going to sponsor that?
I don't know. Maybe like a bail bondsman.
Lorain County Jail.
A bail bondsman or like a, I think that'd be fun. A bounty hunter. All right, let's go to Ed on a cell. Ed, welcome to the show.
Doing?
Good, man.
Hey, if I live till the 21st of December, I'll be 68 years old.
And well, happy early birthday.
I've been a Browns fan my whole life, and I got to say this. I am sick and tired of them getting these guys that either can't do their job or won't do it. What's the deal with Dwayne Bowe? I mean, if this guy don't want to do his job, we need to find a way to break his contract and get rid of him.
Unfortunately, the $9 million in his contract are guaranteed. There's no way to do it. And I don't know what's going on with Dwayne Bowe, but it does seem to me Dwayne Bowe is still very much active on the, I know he's active on the sideline during the games. I know he's participating in practice. I think he wants to do his job and wants an opportunity to do so. He doesn't make the decision that he's inactive. That's not Dwayne Bowe's call.
No, but I think a lot of the reason why, and it's going to be very difficult out of the blue to just build Dwayne Bowe into a game plan simply because we're not, no receiver struggling, you know, with drops, with and so on and so forth, because when given opportunities, they've produced. Hawk in his role, Gabriel in his role, and yes, you'd like to see more, but Benjamin's the number one, Barnage is the number two. Are you going to take touches away from Barnage or Benjamin for Bowe's touches? I think it'd be ludicrous. You know, these guys are playing right now. You got to roll with who's hot. And the combinations that John DeFlip was getting very comfortable with each and every Sunday will continue to be his guys moving forward until one of them starts to fail. And then at that point, you go to your bench and you bring in a Dwayne Bowe and you go, hey, man, this guy's not performing. We need you to step up. You've been in it. You've been in the meetings. You've been close. Now is the time.
Got to find a way to do it. Steve in Austin, Texas, welcome to the show.
Hi, guys. Thanks. Matt's comment about the run defense incensed me enough that I had to call in. I have a few quick points I want to make about the run defense. So
sure, go ahead, man.
We all know we're 32nd in the league. Last year, we were 32nd in the league. We're not just 32nd in the league. We're 8.8 yards per game worse than the 31st team in the league. And that's the biggest gap between two rankings in run defense. So we're not just the worst. We're the worst by a lot. And to make that even worse, so we've only played six games. Two of our six games have been against teams from the bottom four in run offense in the league. Three of our six games have been from three of the bottom six run offenses in the league. So we're not just bad, we're bad against the worst. And what I think is, no matter who we put in there, we're not getting the job done. It has to be the scheme. Doesn't matter what there's no way that every person that we put in there is doing the wrong thing all the time. It seems to me like our run defense is just so predicated on everything being perfect that it's not realistic. Like, we're not going to win every one-on-one matchup against an NFL team throughout the course of the game. It doesn't make sense. There has to be something about the scheme that has more, I don't know, flexibility to when something goes a little bit wrong, it's not a disaster.
You're right about that.
So, I mean, I don't know if, you know, I don't know if we have to make a change in the coordinator or if O'Neal can make a change to his plan, but that's what I think we need to do, is make a significant scheme change, or we're just going to have continuity of worst run D in the NFL.
Well, thank you very much for the call. We appreciate it. And as I've said time and time again, it's very, I'm telling you what I see, but I don't know what's being coached. I don't know what's being told. But he makes a great point that whatever it is, you can't tell me Ndamukong Suh is going to come in here and save us. You can't tell me who else is a J.J. Watt. J.J. Watt would help, but as you can see down in Houston, that defense is vulnerable too when a lot of guys don't do their jobs and you're not making plays.
And they're taking on a St. Louis Rams team that is number one in the NFL at 4.8 yards a carry. The Browns 31st, giving up over 5 yards per carry. Todd Gurley is going to test this run defense in a way that the Browns have not yet been tested this season. Since Todd Gurley has come into the lineup for this team, all he has done is run the football and run the football incredibly effectively against what are, statistically speaking, some pretty darn good run defenses. He comes in the two games that he has been the main man, against Arizona and against the Green Bay Packers. The Packers came into this game before Gurley. They were in the top 15 in the league against the run. And then after Gurley, when he ran for 159 yards against them, they fell significantly. And then you've got the Arizona Cardinals, who were, again, a very good run defense and currently are still in the top half of the league, even after he hung 146 yards. On them. Todd Gurley has been unbelievable. And if this run defense thinks that it has been tested, it hasn't seen anything yet like they are going to see this Sunday in St. Louis on a Todd Gurley coming off of a bye week with 2 weeks to prepare.
And the guy right now, as you mentioned, through two games, he averages 27 rushes a game.
Yeah.
So it's going to be opportunity after opportunity after opportunity. And I'm sure that's, you know, that's 50% of their offense is giving the ball to Todd Gurley.
Yes, it is. Todd Gurley, on 45 snaps, carried the ball 30 times against the Packers.
How many?
He was on the field for 45 snaps. He carried it 30 times. That means once you saw Todd Gurley come on the field, there was a 70% chance, maybe it was 66.7% chance, that he was running the football, and he still ran for 159 yards.
Probably had a reception or two as well.
He had no receptions and no targets
okay.
In that game.
The next game, though.
The game before that, he was on the field for 36 snaps. And he touched the ball 21 times.
Yeah.
Todd Gurley's on the field. He's going to get the football. And we're only going to see more and more Todd Gurley as the season goes on. This run defense is going to be, this is a significant, significant point of emphasis. It has been from day one. And quite frankly, I don't know what's wrong. You can see on tape what's wrong, where the breakdowns are. But in terms of fixing it, it's not like this is a new problem. This is a 22-game problem now. They were last year. They're last after six games this year. This is a 22-game problem. So it's the same coaches. They're seeing the same tape. A lot of the same players. In fact, some people who are supposed to be even better to help this team stop the run, right? That's what it's all about.
Yeah.
They're trying. That's why you brought in Danny Shelton. That's why you drafted Xavier Cooper. And yet this problem continues for this team. I don't know that there's an easy solution, and I don't know if it's coaching. I don't know if it's playing. I don't know what it is, but it's something they're going to have to figure out, because the next few weeks you go against Todd Gurley, then you go against the rejuvenated Chris Johnson down in Arizona, who's running for 100 yards a game. Then you go against Jeremy Hill and Giovanni Bernard, who are one of the best running tandems in the league. And then you go against Le'Veon Bell. And then you come after your bye week, and you go back against Justin Forsett, who rushed for $150 against you. It's not getting any easier. In fact, it's getting much, much harder. You face the Titans, who can't run the football so far this year. You face the Raiders, who don't really run the football so far this year. You face the Chargers, who don't really run the football.
At all.
And that's three of your games. Now you're going in a streak now with five straight games against teams that run the football four straight before the bye week.
Yeah. Got to get it right.
There is no other choice. There is no other choice. Ronnie, I mean, you came in last week against a team that was averaging 71 yards rushing for a game for the season.
And doubled their average.
And then some. They added 14 yards to their per game average. Think about that. 14 yards. 216-578-0850. When we come back, it will be time to hand out the grades on the offensive side of the ball. We can also get your calls in 216-578-0850. It's Cleveland Browns Daily. It's driven by Liberty Ford.